year and a half ago, 2 years, Bitcoin was still a joke.
Yeah.
Bitcoin was still something that was very hard for someone legitimate to, you had to have balls to go speak of it like a legitimate thing, mm-hmm. like a serious player. And today, it is a legitimate safe haven asset. Like, even though it hasn't been adopted like that, in the sense that like every institution is rushing out to buy, the conversation has completely changed, like night and day.
What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I went on with the meme factory, and I don't think we talked about anything, but I'm gonna make it available to you guys anyway. It's gonna be available here, but I don't know why you're listening. I don't know why you're here listening to this. These headphones are not even plugged in. My mic, I can't get it to work. I don't know why. I don't know why you would be here listening to this episode. There's nothing to talk about with the meme factory. Mr. Potato has nothing useful to say. But we talked for like an hour and 20 minutes. And I read an advertisement for underwear that just has a hole where the flap is supposed to be. So it's not really underwear. That happened. You should check out HRF and the Financial Freedom Report for something that actually has a little bit of signal and is useful and ought to be listened to or read. There's a link right down in the show notes. And if you want another very practical and useful thing, you can check out the BitKit mobile wallet. Those details are also in the show notes. It's a mobile wallet that has Bitcoin on chain and Lightning, with you always holding your own keys. Those are both very useful things. This episode, I'm not sure if this is going to be of any value. So here it is. I guess listen to it if you want.
All right. Welcome, everybody. Welcome in. You made it to another episode of the Meme Factory Stream Test. This is stream test number 162. It's starting to feel like it's not a test, but whatever. Keep it a test. It can't shut us down. Hey.
Is that how that works?
That's exactly how that works. We've never been shut down on YouTube.
Test. You can't ban us.
Look.
This is just a test.
You can't argue with results is all I'm saying.
It's working.
So. It's working so far. So this evening, we're joined by Dr. Guy Swan, Big Sean Harris, Yellow himself, and World of Rusty. Everybody say hello.
What's up?
Hello.
Hello, hello. Hello.
Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning.
All right. So as everybody knows, we got to start this off by getting paid. So I got to push it over to Guy here to pull up his DMs for the ad copy for the day. And okay, yeah. Guy, if you could rip through it,
is this
then
my responsibility?
This here? Is your responsibility. I mean,
is this on DMs on where?
On the Twitter.
Twitter X. Twats.
Yeah, we twatted it too.
Okay, we twatted it. All right. Dude, the last message I have from you
is another
is
ad
from
copy.
July 11, 2024 on the last bullshit sponsor that I had to read. Okay, hi, my name is Guy Swan, and I've had enough of getting my manhood caught in my underwear. It's the worst. This episode is sponsored by Over the Tops, the world's first underwear brand bold enough to remove the front hole entirely. We're not counting Elliot Page. Why? Because no one uses it. The hole, not Elliot Page. Although Elliot doesn't seem to be getting a lot of work these days. And worse, that hole's been causing problems you didn't even realize you had. Fly drift, that slow creeping fabric shift that turns your access point into a trapdoor of betrayal. Double layer bunching. Enjoy that sweaty origami-like wad pressing into your day? Didn't think so. False confidence. You think you're aiming through the fly? You're not. You're going rogue. We all are. With Over the Tops, it's over the band. Sit on the thumb. Look out, urinal. Here it comes. It's cheaper. It's cleaner. It's lighter. and it respects what we're all doing anyway. Going over the top, like Stallone taught us. Still clinging to the front hole? Well, that's not tradition. That's denial with stitching. Over the tops, because flaps are a failure of imagination.
Hey,
well done. I don't know. I don't know why anybody ever has trouble with this. I think you did a great job.
I'm sold. I mean,
Greg, I'm kind of. I'm just. Greg, were you know, mentioning? Were you taking shots at someone right there, Greg? Who were you taking shots at?
Nobody. I mean, Elliot Page kind of fell into my lap.
Okay, right there. Is that what you're doing?
I mean, he fell into the joke as it was coming out, you know. And I was just like, I may as well put it in there. Because nobody's putting him in films. How are you doing, guy? It's good to see you, man.
Doing pretty good, boss.
As you mentioned, it's been a year since we messaged back and forth on Twitter. It's been a year since you've been on the show, roughly. And lots happened in between. But it also made me realize that I've been messaging you on Signal a bunch of dope memes that have gone without, you know, response emojis.
Shitty memes.
But
it's very shitty memes.
Because you're not using Signal, I figured out.
I do break it out every once in a while, but I always ignore yours.
That's impressive. It's hard to do because I
think I just have notifications for our chat.
Yeah, it's just
ancient guy notifications.
Guy is a Keep Maxi, Greg. Come on. We know that guy is a Keep Maxi.
He is a Keep Maxi.
That's exactly right.
There he is.
Oh, shit. I'm not even updated.
I know.
Oh, my God. I have so many messages in here.
Yep. There we go. Okay. Oh, now, the God, rest of the show bad. Will be Guy That's reading scary. His Signal messages for the last 6 or 7 months.
Yep. That's my bad. A lot of them are from you. Most of them are from you.
Good. You have a good
Greg has this thing where he just keeps messaging people that ignore him just over and over again. It doesn't stop him.
No.
It doesn't.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It doesn't stop.
He does the same thing with Labra until eventually he comes back.
Well, I have anecdotal evidence to support this.
Unfortunately, Labra's completely disappeared this time. I have no way to communicate with the dog anymore. He's gone. Pedro's scared.
It's unfortunate.
I think Yellow still communicates with him.
He might. But we'll never know, will we, Yellow? I think that speaks for itself. So,
oh, what is this, a cue for me to interrupt and insert some humor to this?
You know, it was, and then you missed the
participate,
cue.
Participate, maybe. A little bit.
If I want, guy, okay?
You don't have to be funny. Nobody thinks you're actually
funny. Okay, guy, don't
push
me. Jesus. All you guys do want. You gotta do this. You gotta do that. You gotta be funny. You gotta do something. Sing. And I give.
Sounds like Yellow hasn't had chocolate milk today.
Exactly. It sounds like he's...
I don't drink chocolate milk, Sean, and you know this.
It sounds like the problem. He hasn't had any chocolate milk. Confirmed, Sean. Good call.
Confirmed. Someone get him. He needs some milk.
Pretty good.
So, guy, you're still I still owe you a giant debt of gratitude. I read very slow, and Bitcoin Audible for me was a source to be able to get like caught up on understanding Bitcoin faster than like picking up the books and like going through them myself. Because a lot of those books are also not like audio books. You're not going to find a lot of Mises or a lot of Rothbard in Audible. How is that going, and where are you spending your time these days with regards to Bitcoin?
So a couple things, actually. Well, first off, it's going great. I've been trying to get back into the video content is just so much more valuable these days with the way the platforms work and way people's attention spans are.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to boil down stuff into like this zone of like 3 to 8 minutes of like trying to hit the point just to draw people into the longer discussion. And it's super hard to get a good argument or a frame of reference boiled down into 4 minutes or 5 minutes that's coherent, you know, and like really hits the point home. So it's been slow going, but I've been doing a lot of work in that just to try to get the ideas further out there. But generally, the show has been doing great. I've been doing audiobooks pretty regularly. I just finished up Bushido Bitcoin, and which was super good. And I'm listening through doing first proof listens on that, which I've kind of taken the last couple of days off. But I should have that done this week, a few days probably. And then we'll push that to Audible and just see. It takes a couple of weeks for them to approve it, so that should be out soon. I got a book on Craig Wright that I'll be starting very, very soon, which I am super stoked about. It'll be kind of the definitive history of the whole thing, of fake Toshi.
Nice.
Got a fiction actually coming kind of soon, which I am super stoked about. And I've been working on the Bitcoin Mining Handbook by Brains, as well as, and we got lined up two other books that I'll be doing by them. So I'm in front of the microphone most of the time. And I'm reading right now for the show, The Great Taking by Roger Webb. Dude, holy shit. Well, this one's kind of crazy. Have you not heard this?
I haven't heard Bushido Bitcoin or The Great Taking, so I'm due explanations.
Bushido here. Bitcoin is Svetsky's new book.
Oh, okay.
And it's really good.
Is it short?
In fact, I don't agree with everything in it, but I don't agree with everything in it, but there are some things that he has laid out that has made me think differently on where and why I agree and or disagree on certain things, because it definitely changed my perspective. Like, it kind of, you know, you can look at something and kind of have your shape of the thing, but you can still think that the shape is the same, but your perspective on it changes. Like, it shifts just a little bit and you're like, oh shit, I never thought about it like that. There's a couple of really interesting things in the book, especially about non-aggression principle and about like the selective use of violence aggressively and defensively, and sort of thing, like, because he really pulls from Bushido, from the Code of Samurai, and goes into why that and chivalry, which he actually compares as being deeply related to each other, and shows why they're deeply related to each other, even though they had no exposure to each other, and specifically why it is that these two different things arose and have such strong basis in a cultural and spiritual identities for such a long, like, survive for such a long time. You know, it goes back to that question, like, anything that survives hundreds, thousands of years, is it wrong? It's just a question of defining what is right about it that gives it such longevity. And he's done a great job of exploring those ideas in a way that I hadn't, or I guess I just had not before. So really, really great book. I'm also reading The Great Taking on the show, which I just released part one at the end of last week. I literally stopped it to eat steak and then get up here. So I should be done with the other parts to be released this week, hopefully tonight, since I'm here by myself, in a weird, quiet house. Dude, it's the getting into why the kind of legal framework has been changed, and kind of the robbing that occurred in the Great Financial Crisis, and then mirroring it to what they did in the Great Depression, and not only like what they did, but how it was caused, and how essentially a select few banks and the central bank and the Federal Reserve basically ate the capital of the entire country and much of the Western world. They just controlled the entire thing, and that this was done purposefully and selectively, and they laid the legal groundwork for exactly the outcome, and then both incited and refused to do the one thing that they could do to prevent the ongoing Great Depression, or the crash and then the depression to follow, specifically so they could let the thousands of banks fall, reopen the selective banks, which then bought up everybody's well bought up. They didn't even buy it. They just consumed. They just.
You're talking about the aggregated. 1930s, right?
Yeah, 1930s. Aggregated everybody's assets into these entities. They literally, like, people's cash just disappeared.
You're gonna have to walk me through how they laid the framework here and then how they did the grab.
Okay. So in laying out this framework, they built, not only did they expand the money supply well past the actual, in fact, the only thing that compares to today is the late 1920s. They massively expanded the money supply and the debt in order to blow up a bubble. And then
while we were still on a gold standard, correct?
While we were sort of, but yes. And they were allowed to expand credit, quote unquote, allowed. The rules were such that they could expand credit where gold backing was 40% of whatever their credit expansion was. And when they basically reached the limit and the collapse came, they actually, even though they had everything in position and able to push the liquidity to prevent the crisis and actually let a slow unraveling and shifting of capital continue, they just waited as bank after bank after bank fell. And it's funny because he actually talked to the author actually talked to his, like, his father and his grandmother about, you know, what happened and, you know, what they knew about their situation, because they were young kids. They were like 12, 13 years old back when this had happened. And he said the thing about it was that nobody, like, even wealthy people just didn't have money anymore. Like, they just had deposits in the bank that were just gone. And when those banks went under, the larger banks, the select banks during the bank holiday, the Federal Reserve just said, these are the banks that are allowed to reopen. And they just told the Treasury, these are the ones that you're going to allow to reopen. And they said, okay, here's all the big banks that you're going to let happen. And they opened back up and they absorbed all of the assets of all of these other banks. And then they confiscated everything that was on debt. And anybody who had any cash, they didn't have any cash anymore. So obviously they couldn't pay for anything on debt. And they literally, like, the Cleveland, I can't remember what the institution called. It was a Cleveland bank that became the sixth largest bank in the country at the time. They literally confiscated everybody's mortgages, cars, all of this stuff. And then they let them, the people who owned the bank, owned the houses, the actual people who purchased the homes, come back in as renters. So they just took the assets and then charged them rent to come back and live in the house just so they could keep it up and keep the heat on. And before they sold all the assets off, so they sold the houses to somebody else.
So BlackRock's doing it backwards is what I'm hearing.
Well, they've done the exact same thing today, except that so legally all of those assets, none of the liabilities were owed to anybody. So the money disappears, poof, nobody owns shit. All of the liabilities, the assets are immediately owned by the banks. And then they turned around and did 6102. And they claimed that the only way that they can expand credit again is if they get everybody's gold. And the danger was that everybody was hoarding gold. So everybody has to, and you're a criminal. The punishments were fine up to $10,000, which $10,000 was a shit ton of money back then, and or 10 years in prison, or both, if you did not turn in your gold. And they also legally made it so that you could not use it anywhere. You couldn't spend your gold, or you couldn't trade with your gold, because it was illegal to have it. And everybody was terrible, and they were hoarding their gold, which was causing all this problem, and they couldn't expand credit. And so what did the Federal Reserve do? Confiscated all the gold and then hoarded the gold. And they just held it the whole time. They didn't do anything with it. And they claimed that this was necessary because otherwise, because of this rule of 40%, they weren't going to be able to ever expand any credit if they didn't get everybody's gold. So they went through this long process of slowly and surely confiscating all of the gold, all of the deposits, all of the contractual gold ownership, everything from every different avenue, and then didn't expand credit. So the very reason they claimed that they had to do it, they didn't do. They just got the backing got the assets, stole the houses, stole the cars, killed any bank that had any potential to actually survive or provide any sort of resistance to their total fucking takeover of the entire financial system, and then rented it all back to everybody and hoard and just held all the gold. It
sounds to me like they were expanding credit to all those new renters.
Yeah, they were. They were expanding credit to everybody who was going to then purchase the rent from all of the fucking things that they just owned. So they just suddenly just have a they now just have a rate of return on everything that they didn't own.
All right, so play it.
Everything across the economy. And what's funny is that, you know, we're told this bullshit that FDR like helped and was like seen as a hero. And he said specifically, and I'm sure there's a bunch of socialist dumbasses at the time who did think that. But it was funny. He said his grandpa specifically said, it's like, no, everybody he knew and he himself saw him as literal Satan, like that he was the most evil piece of garbage that they had ever.
Guy, like, I'm witnessed. Sorry to do this, but we got a rule. If Rusty's got his hand up, I have to interrupt you and let him ask his question.
Okay.
Hey, good morning. I just thought I'd give
a chance.
I just wanted to give you a chance just to take a breather for a second. we all know what happens when you ask an autistic person about their special interest. And then we'll give you a break. No, I did have a question, though, going back for about 10 minutes. We were talking about you writing a book.
How's your stuff going? 15 minutes later.
There's so many. Oh man, I had so many jokes in the last 10 minutes that I had to store up. First of all, you were right. People only have attention spans of like 5 minutes. When you said you were writing a book about the Craig Wright story, does that mean
I am reading a book about Fangtoshi.
Craig Wright. Okay, cool. Does that mean that there's going to be another book coming out by Roger Ver called like Hijacking Satoshi or something like that? We're going to get both sides of the story. Are you going to read
it? I really
it?
Hope so.
You read?
Or maybe one by Catelyn Ayer.
Rusty, out of all the jokes you could have used, that was the one for the
That's
last
That's the one week. You wasted it on.
Come on.
Did you get the one about the attention span of the 5 minutes?
It's rather short.
Yeah,
I think that.
I wrote that one
notes.
Down. Yeah,
yeah, because he said
that was it. I had some others, but they left me.
Greg mentioned one, which was Bushido Bitcoin. That was a short story, right? That was wasn't mm-hmm. a long. It was a short read. Right.
Yeah, it's 440 short pages. Big
short
words.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing I was going to do was like impersonate Nixon doing the whole speculating, protecting the dollar from the speculators in the Nixon voice. I was going to do that as well.
You're about 40 years early, though.
Yeah, we're still in the 30s.
Okay.
Do it. Let's hear it.
It's relevant.
Let him do it. Let's hear it.
It's relevant.
Protecting the dollar from the speculators. What's that?
That was
okay.
That was terrible.
That was so bad. Kermit the Frog was doing the Darth Vader voice. What the fuck was that?
It was Rusty doing his best American, which wasn't bad. But then he
first place participation.
Then I think he forgot to put Nixon on top of the American accent.
My American accent is way better than Master's.
Oh, is this what we're doing today?
My American accent is the
best. There you go. There
everybody's
you go.
America. 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 Directly in the southern right corner.
So, gotta come from the
like
good.
America's been screwing over. The American government's been screwing over its people for a long time, right?
It does. Like, it does seem like that way.
Like, I'm rocking. I'm trying to get as autistic
I
as
I like your laughs right now.
That was good,
it's been
so
bad
good.
For so long.
What I did see was you have Daddy DeSantis down in Florida who is mentioning they want to get rid of the tax, property taxes on homes. That seems like another thing that they would have done in the 1930s is just if they can't figure out a way to get you out of ownership, they're just going to tax you so high that now you can't own anything. Seems like the play by the governments has always been you will own nothing and you'll be happy, right?
But isn't DeSantis doing the opposite? Seems
like
the easier
strategy is because, especially from a banking perspective, if you have control of the interest rate, you can just make a bubble, which just means that you own all the assets bought in the bubble, because you're the one, you're the counterparty that all the collateral falls back to when it busts. So you can just keep doing this game over and over again, and that's just what they do.
Which brings me back to LIBOR.
LIBOR.
Ooh, Tom Luongo, get Tom Luongo on us right now.
No, I don't want to do that yet. I want to hear more London. About. I want to hear more about the Great Taking, because Guy was on a roll there. He was talking about how president was more of a socialist than he was a capitalist, and then I want to see how this translates to the GFC.
He didn't say that. He said that FDR was the devil. That's what he said. That's
paraphrasing.
He just said the exact same. That's what he just said.
Same.
You're just same. Same. Different, but same.
But still same.
I couldn't tell on that one.
But so the way this relates to the global financial crisis and the situation we have today is that gold isn't even considered like the dominant collateral anymore. The dominant collateral is now everybody's assets, securities, is commodities, contracts, like all of these things in the, it's everybody's retirement, it's equity in every company. That's the dominant mode of collateral.
That's inside.
Collateral in
inside the U.S.
No, everywhere.
Well, I'd still say USTs are, what, 60% of the collateral market?
USD dominated.
I mean USTs, treasury bills.
Oh, well, bonds are included in that. Like,
gotcha. The
securities, bonds is a form of security.
I just felt like they could be separated out as the number one, and then like everything else is secondary.
Sure.
Unless you're inside the US, and then you can talk about it.
Have you ever heard of Greg Foss talking about the dog that wags the tail?
Yeah.
What happened to him? Where's Greg Foss?
Yeah, I don't know what happened to him, actually. He was doing some energy thing, and I think that went south.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think, but I do know that he's been doing the risk thing, the risk chair for 30 years. I remember that.
It might be 35 years at this point.
But so they have laid the legal groundwork that basically these depository institutions at a national level and then at an international level that all clear to the basically back to the Federal Reserve. They have made the legal framework, and this was actually proven in court precedent in case law during the global financial crisis, because this shift has occurred since from about 2004 to 2014, when basically the entire standard global operation was the same. And you don't own, there's no way to own securities anymore. If you own securities today, in 2004, you could own a security. And especially in Sweden or Finland, a lot of Nordic states, and in some areas in the EU, you could outright own the security. You could get your paper security, and or if you just bought it with an institution, you could have what's referred to as a VP account. And you actually held the legal entity you were a legal entity that held the legal ownership of that security. And if anything happened, if the bank went under, if the central clearing party went under, didn't matter, that was your security, and the local jurisdiction would enforce that ownership. And so you would just take your security and you'd be like, oh man, sucks to be this banking institution that's totally leveraged to the hilt, and you know, they thought they wanted my stuff. But we have leveraged so bad and gone through so many cycles now of over leveraged on top of being over leveraged, that they were desperate to figure out what to call collateral against any of it, because we have no collateral. We have zero collateral. In fact, in the global financial crisis, when like JP Morgan was moving derivatives, and this was completely supported by the Fed, they were moving a lot of these assets, quote unquote assets, the toxic debts into subsidiaries, and then letting subsidiaries close, and they were moving the assets to different subsidiaries, And so they're just separating their stuff and then letting subsidiaries collapse, then taking all of the underlying assets and collateral and then merging it back into the bank. So they were literally just like, their institution is fucked. They're insolvent. They have nothing to cover.
Not anymore.
And then they're moving their toxic debt into a subsidiary. They let it collapse. They go through bankruptcy proceedings. And then because they are, and this is not even a joke, called the protected class of these financial institutions, they then get to the very company, the very institution that issued and sold these securities to customers, then get to confiscate them back from the customer as collateral because they're the SIFMU something. I cannot remember what the acronym stands for. It's something similar to kind of like the whole too big to fail thing. They're like a systemically important financial jackasses. And so even though they issued and sold these securities to customers, they then get to take them right back for no reason and screw over their actual customers. They just get to sell them and then take them and own them. Like, imagine if I sold you a house, but then if anything ever happened to my bank, I get to take back your house. Like, not even like a mortgage. I sold it to you and you owned it with the property. Like, you own it in the city hall, like in the registry of deeds. You own it. It's yours. You've paid for it outright. But then my bank goes under and I get to push this to a subsidiary called Not My Bank LLC. And I get to push all the bad debt that I completely irresponsibly took on because I am a complete piece of shit idiot who doesn't know how to manage my money. I push it into the subsidiary, collapse the subsidiary, and then I get to confiscate your house to back my assets of the new, of what's left of the institution. That is literally what happened in the global financial crisis. And a whole bunch of clients got together and did a big class action lawsuit. And then they said, no, here it is in the law, which they've been changing slowly since 2004. Here it is in the law that because they're the SIFMU, the systemically important institution, then the conflict of interest that was usually illegal for them to like claim that they get to now take back the collateral is different. It's not the same here because they're in literally the quote unquote protected class of financial institutions. And so they just took all of the client's assets of the institution that they collapsed, that they drove into the ground, and took all of the client assets and used it as collateral to basically restart. And they moved, they were moving in just one, this one bank, they're moving like something like $75 to $77 trillion of toxic debt into these subsidiaries to collapse them. And then after they took everybody's collateral and assets back, the global economy, the whole global economy was $74 trillion at the time.
Okay. Where are we at now?
JP Morgan was clearing out toxic debts by pushing it into subsidiaries of $77
trillion. Oh my God.
One bank. And many banks were doing this, all at the behest of the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve was saying, this is good to go. This is how you clear your books. Take everybody's assets, take the collateral, and clear out the debt. Now, you don't own anything anymore, anywhere. Nowhere in the global financial system does anybody own a security anymore. And in no local jurisdiction will your right to that security, whether it's in your retirement or anything, be legally protected. Now the central security, he uses acronyms and I forget what the acronym stands for, the CSDs and the international version of these things clear all the way back up to the central clearing parties that basically end up being backstopped by the Federal Reserve. They own all of it. Everything is a pooled resource. You don't actually own a actual security with your name on it. You own the entitlement to a security pool that the right to collateral belongs to the international CSP.
Can I make sure I got this right? I want to make sure I'm following you so far. Can I? Yep. Can I? All right. So let's say we're on the cusp of another breakdown like that.
Mm-hmm.
I own a Vanguard IRA, and Vanguard is going toxic, so they pushed the toxic assets to a subsidiary.
That's I don't think they need to do it this time, though.
Oh, so all right. So Vanguard goes toxic, and then what?
They just take the collateral.
They just bail themselves in with their client's collateral?
Yes. And you own a quote-unquote pro rata entitlement to it, which means that if they try to dump it on the market or the price crashes or anything, they'll take the collateral. And then and they can take it instantly, by the way. They now have a direct system that can just pull without any legal fight or argument or paperwork or anything. They just pull the collateral to the international clearing party. And you own nothing, and they can take as long as they want, or not at all. In fact, they literally say it's free of payment. They can take the collateral, which means they don't have to pay you anything, but your entitlement is supposedly a pro rata ownership of the price of the thing. But if the price of everything is collapsing and they're just taking all the collateral and you can't do anything with it, you can't sell it, then you don't own anything. You own nothing. There's no ownership rights. There's no legal protections. There's nothing. Anything in a financial institution, a security or anything. If we have another major crisis where multiple banks are failing, it's just going to be gone, just like in the Great Depression. And they don't have to 6102 it because they already did. They've 6102'd for the last like 14 years into a financial standard. And they just have it. It's literally just theirs. They sell you basically a napkin that says you own it. It's basically like a shitcoin. It's a perfect example of a shitcoin.
You just made me so much more bullish on Bitcoin.
It doesn't mean anything. They sell you a fake sticker that says you own some of this. And then they can do whatever the hell they want with the sticker. And you're just paying full price for the sticker.
Nice. That guy, MSTR.
It's like a $300 trillion Mt. Gox.
Basically. Makes me want to buy Bitcoin.
Yeah, you get it in cold storage, man. It gets me so worried about people who own ETFs, or because the derivatives market, the liabilities on top of this thing are so crazy. They're multiples the size of.
When you say this economy. Thing, you're just talking about Bitcoin, or are you talking about the entire?
No, the whole system, the whole thing,
the whole king caboodle.
Yeah.
So to think about this more simply, right? What we thought was going to happen, like in after 2008 when they started printing money, and then we really didn't see inflation or like the CMI, which we all know is a lie, because the inflation was bifurcated. It was really asset inflation that happened,
mm-hmm.
And then after 2020, then we really saw very high inflation. I'm rocking back and forth to make Greg just worried because it makes Greg worried. And so
it makes you feel closer to you. So
when you put it like that, right, it just seems like this is where we're headed to this world where the assets continue to inflate and inflate and inflate. And I guess on the long enough time frame, inflation is theft because it takes away your ownership, because inflation will literally, on a long enough time frame, end up where the government owns everything and you own nothing. And
just be sucked up by the central banks, and it'll be used as collateral to quote unquote protect the system.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, how could we let the system fail? That would be terrible for everybody. So it's important that everybody loses all of their stuff and gives it to the central bank to keep the central bank alive.
Well, because they're the only ones that can actually print the currency, because if they print the currency so fast, then the prices run up so high that no one has a shot at ownership of anything. You know, maybe you own something, but then to pass it along to your children, there's no way that they could own anything at that point, because the death taxes you got to pay and also the BS you got to pay.
We've basically been in kind of a permanent everything bubble for like 20 years. It's just been progressive, such that like, because the price of everything is driven so high, so fast, everyone owns everything with debt, which means nobody owns any of it.
Mm-hmm. It's all a liability against some financial institution. And this like goes back to what they were able to do in the Great Depression, is they blow up a bubble, and because they're pushing interest rates, they're basically price controlling interest rates down way below market. Well, then they can just get a whole bunch of people to quote unquote own things for them. Mm-hmm. Because if I issue $100,000 loan out of thin air, $100,000 I didn't have, and you buy a house with it, you bought me a house. You bought me a house. I didn't own a house. Mm-hmm. I didn't build a house. I didn't do anything. I just had the right to issue $100,000 in debt, and at a price that makes no sense, because nobody's charging me for rent of that. You know, if I had to borrow $100,000 from you, I can't just give it to you for nothing.
Good question.
But if I can issue it out of thin air,
where
I drive up the price of the house, and you're the one that takes on the risk, and you give me the house. And for all the time that I don't have the house, you're paying me rent on $100,000 that I never owned. Like, imagine if you could go from zero to owning a house and 4% per month on that house for no reason. For no reason. You just have the authority to write that debt into existence because you're a special institution. I would love to be that special institution. Can you send me the paper? Like, I'll fill out all the paperwork and become that special institution. And then you give me a house. That'd be great. And they just do this in mass. They do this systemically across, just completely fuck the prices of the entire market and bloat everything to a point that anybody who actually earned, saved to buy a house, can't afford one. So they have to go into debt too. And even the people who literally actually earned and built all of the houses have to go into debt to buy the house, and the bank still owns it. So the bank owns everything, because they either inflate the prices away or they give money at a completely under market rate to anybody to buy them a house.
Yeah, it's funny, right?
Every time you buy something on debt, you're just buying it for the bank.
Like, I have friends, right? And people are starting to buy homes, and they'll be like, mm-hmm. new homeowner. It's like, okay, you put, you know, $25,000 down on a $500,000 home.
Yeah.
You're a homeowner now? Like, no, the bank owns you. The bank owns that home. The moment you miss one payment, like, it's going right back to the bank.
Three payments.
That's the thing, is it's not even the moment you miss the payment. You're right. You're right. But it's not even about missing the payment.
Yeah.
The second the bank needs it
yep.
for any of their purposes to protect their own ass, or to make sure that they can pay the loan to the other bank, it's gone. You don't actually legally own it. You own a liability at pro rata rates, which means that if it crashes, you're out the house. You don't have physical, like, genuine ownership of anything anymore. It's all pooled resources owned by the central bank and the central clearing parties.
Common resources.
I think the price of Bitcoin's, since Guy Swan started talking today, the price of Bitcoin's gone up like $1,000. This is working.
Yay.
It's working.
Nice.
People are watching the meme factory. We have Larry Fink is watching us right now.
Big market moves. Big market.
I feel like in practice, what just keeps happening with all of that is that every time you get ahead, the government just finds a way to make sure to put you back under again. Like, every time we you know, you get a good portfolio, things start to look good, start to build wealth for your family, and then all of a sudden, oh, sorry guys, financial crisis. But don't worry,
shucks,
everyone
didn't see this one coming.
everyone is affected. It's not just you. Don't worry. And everyone's like, yeah, that's true. I guess everyone went broke, so I guess I can't complain. It's like same thing with my superannuation. Like, I've finally managed to create a good superannuation fund, which is compulsory investment that we have in Australia.
Oh, jeez.
And then and you're not allowed to touch it until you're 55. And mine's a perfect vehicle for Bitcoin. So I put my superannuation into Bitcoin. It goes up big. And then the government goes, oh, sorry. Now we're going to, starting on July 1st this year, we're going to start taking unrealized capital gains from you. It's like, it's another way that the government has like closed a loophole and takes half.
Are they actually doing that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's coming in July 1st this year.
Well, unrealized capital gain. The problem was that a few years ago, the Australians, they decided to give their guns to the government, and
it's worked out real well.
now the government.
Yeah. There was this guy that like shot a whole bunch of people, and then the government was like, "Hey, can't have that."
Should the government pay for him?
Yeah, exactly. Everybody.
It's a test stream, guys. It's a test stream, YouTube.
We had a gun amnesty. Where people can hand in their guns, and you don't get in trouble for having the gun. It's like, oh, really? I can hand my gun in, and they don't get in trouble.
Thanks.
It's amazing. Thank you.
That's great. Would you like my balls? I could cut those off too.
My balls, my wife, my Bitcoin.
I have really good jars. I got really pretty jars to put them in.
My home, my superannuation, whatever it was mine is now yours, government.
Mm.
It worries me about people building, about people buying Bitcoin derivatives.
That's insane that they're doing derivatives on Bitcoin. I can't believe they have the balls to fucking do that.
Yeah.
That's just, it's going to blow up.
Yeah,
it has to.
It has to.
Why? People are like, how can this blow up? It's like, look at the bond market right now. People didn't think the bond market could ever blow up.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's funny. I think there will be a huge fight. And I actually think the only anybody or anything that can put up any resistance would be a collective holding the line of people who hold Bitcoin keys.
Mm-hmm.
Because
guns too.
Oh yeah. All right. Yeah. With guns.
With guns. Yeah.
Like,
can you send me some guns?
I'll sponsor your visa.
I'm really sorry.
You should
move over here. We got guns.
Option, right? That's a good thing about the superannuation thing. If shit gets too bad, you can just be like, well, guess what? My keys are in my head and I'm out.
Yeah, that's what makes this whole thing different. And it's what makes what's happened in Bitcoin lately both a little unnerving, but also just wild.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that's been happening. So what do you mean?
It's happening. The shift in mentality. Like I still think people have discounted the, it's harder to see the mental framing shift, like the perspective that people have on it, because it's slow, you know, it's a gradually then suddenly thing. But a year and a half ago, 2 years, Bitcoin was still a joke.
Yeah.
Bitcoin was still something that was very hard for someone legitimate you had to have balls to go speak of it like a legitimate thing, mm-hmm. like a serious player. And today, it is a legitimate safe haven asset. Like, even though it hasn't been adopted like that, in the sense that like every institution is rushing out to buy, the conversation has completely changed. Like night and day. And I don't think people realize, because it's kind of the premise of the conversation. You know, it's the underlying, where are we arguing from? So it's about like the decision of when and how and what to allocate and how to think about Bitcoin, as opposed to Bitcoin or not. Like is Bitcoin even a consideration on the table? Like, we've got like 14 states passing strategic reserve bills. The United States has the U.S. government has passed strategic reserve bill. Like, this feels like the cusp of suddenly, you know, it does. Like, a lot of, you don't have to have an enormous amount of capital to move enormous amounts of market cap, because price is on the margin. And, you know, we were always going to break down in the cycles. I really thought the institutional shift was happening basically the last round, but institutions are very, very slow. You know, they're not rushing to anything. And it feels now like what I had expected it to feel like in 2021. And then it never actually manifested.
Have you noticed that the normies don't care about that whole, like, you know, like the American government starts, the SBR, all these states in America are slowly, it's like out in the open. Everybody is here, and the normie is just like whatever. I don't know. Still nothing.
Yeah.
Russia and China settling oil contracts and Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's like adoption in real time, out in the open, and it's and nothing.
Yeah. One of the biggest wins was Steak and Shake.
That was great.
Accepting Bitcoin.
That's, yeah,
and then
that's
on the great. Thing, it says the price in sats, the Bitcoin price, and then the fiat price. Not the dollar price, the fiat price. That is a huge mental, like perspective win or narrative win.
I think the bigger win is going to be when they start pricing their shit in sats on the menu board.
That'll be a while, but it will probably be in the midst of a crisis when that shift starts to happen.
Might cause some chaos in the line, though. It's like people just sitting there watching the menu and watching the price of their burger or whatever, and just be like, come on, just no, just give me a sec. Just give it. Just wait. Just wait.
Just hang tight. It's going to be cheaper in a minute. Oh, no, it got really expensive. Let's buy.
Oh, FOMO in.
FOMO in.
All right. I want to give Sean
their orders out.
Sean said he wanted to ask the closing question for Guy. I think it's about time for it. Sean, what do you have for Guy here?
Guy, do you know what happens at block height 1,050,000?
Oh shit!
Fuck yeah!
I have no idea.
Oh.
We have started, ladies and gentlemen.
Block 1,050,000 gets a proof of work attached to it. I do know that.
Yes. There's a Coinbase in it, like all the blocks. Come on, Guy.
I got nothing
you guys
else.
Spend more about Bitcoin than anyone we know. Anyone
like,
that
only
I
one
know.
Thing that happens consistently on round numbers of blocks is like it's only like pretty much one thing.
Oh,
1,050,000. Oh, yeah. The next halving.
There we go.
That's what I'm talking about, Guy. That's what I'm talking about. The next halving.
I thought this was a Meme Factory inside joke. I wasn't even trying to come up with an answer for it.
I thought he had some technical, super technical show. Question to ask. And I was like, oh. Yeah. I remember this meme.
Yes.
Then you made me feel guilty. You're like, you should know this.
You,
like,
should. Yeah. You should know.
Yeah, yeah. Is this a thing?
You figured it out. Is
it when we're introducing bits instead of sats?
You're going to get muted for that shit.
Bits are 100 sats. Bits have always been here.
Yeah, exactly. Come on.
BIP 69.
So just keep your bits to yourself.
The bits and sats proposal.
Bringing that back in.
Nice.
The next halving happens at block height 1,050,000, Guy. You couldn't make it to the first halving party, and that's a shame for you. Not a shame for the halving party.
It was a shame for us, too.
It was a shame for us. It was. I'm just trying to act bigger and stronger.
I got you.
Greg. Yeah. Greg's bigger and stronger than I am, actually. I'm not actually. Okay, going back. So, again, we are throwing the one and only halving party coming up.
The second one and only halving party.
Number two.
It's the Meme Factory halving party. It happens every halving once every 4 years. Guy, you missed out on the last one. You cannot miss out on this one. You Bitcoin Audible, how much knowledge? You're top three best podcaster, in my opinion. We would love to have you come and be a part of the halving party, the second one ever. We have not disclosed the location yet, but we know that you can get there.
I'm pretty sure I'm busy at block 1,048,000, but after that, I'm wide open.
Perfect.
Okay, so
at least 10,000 blocks. So right now, you know, temporary allocation to this in my schedule. I'll put it on my calendar.
Okay.
Guy Swan is time locked in.
Time locked.
Yeah, because we time locked you last time.
It's a multi-sig right here.
We can pull the tape from 2021. You were on the show in December of 2021.
Did I promise?
You said you're gonna be that
I
first
promise one. Harder this
time. Okay. All right. That's good.
Thank you, promise. There's a pinky promise.
If you promise,
I promise so hard. Oh, I promise a bunch of times back to back.
That's a promise derivative.
Clear your schedule. That's all we're saying. Clear your schedule.
Because it's all owned by the clearing party.
Let me just put this out here. There's a lot of people that came down. They weren't expecting much from the meme factory, and they had an absolute magical time at the having party. Corey Bates met his wife down there.
Oh, Master Bates.
Yeah. Surfer Jim. Surfer Jim.
Having a kid now? Oh,
met his girlfriend.
They're having a kid now.
Good married guy.
I
think we brought his wife down.
We had like three or four married couples out of that party, didn't we?
That's how magical it was.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
How many babies are there? I think there's a few.
It's a lot of babies. It's a lot of having party babies.
Do you want another one of those, guy? Have you got enough?
Yet? 9 months after the having party, at least 40 Bitcoiners.
It's at least 21.
But in all seriousness, guy, we would the having party would not be the same without you. So
we don't know that because he wasn't at the first one.
Yeah, but it would have been different. I could see it in my mind.
It would have been different.
All right.
If Guy was so, there, I could see in my mind. You know, we had Ben Sessions was down there. He was waiting for you. He was holding a sign. He said, "Where's Guy?" That was the sign.
Where's he at?
All right. So there was one audience question we did not ask you. It was from Tora Pottle. So before we go, I want to get that answered for him. And I want to make sure I say it right. He wants to know, is it pronounced pecan, pecan, or pecans?
Around here, we call them pecans.
Ooh, pecan pie.
Thank you for still being here. I'm in the mountains. And neither Greg nor Yael, none of those people are here. I'm just hanging out by myself. I'm not even going to re-listen to this episode. I don't remember what we talked about, and I don't think it was important. So, I have nothing useful to add. You shouldn't be here anymore. The episode's basically over. But you should check out the Financial Freedom Report, and you should check out the BitKit wallet, and you should subscribe to Bitcoin Audible for episodes that are, like, better episodes that will come in the future. And because we'll have lots of those. And I'll be back on with the Meme Factory in like 6 months to a year, probably. And I'll unfortunately publish that to this feed as well. All right. Thank you for listening. Until then, I'm Guy Swan. Take it easy, guys.